You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about the strongest storm of the season across the Sierra. The conditions are proving to be challenging for first responders working to recover the bodies of victims killed in a deadly avalanche near Donner Summit. It is the deadliest avalanche in California history. The Sierra Avalanche Center continues to issue an avalanche warning for the Central Sierra, including Castle Peak, where a group of backcountry skiers returning from a three-day trip got caught in an avalanche the size of a football field. Six survivors have been rescued, but the remaining nine victims are believed to be dead. The Nevada County Sheriff's Office says that hazardous weather is hindering recovery efforts. Their identities have not been released. I now want to welcome KCRA reporter Brian Hickey, who has been following the developments of this avalanche very closely and also is a longtime experienced backcountry skier himself. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Vicki, for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time. What are the current conditions right now? I mean, I'm just looking out your window, and of course, there's a ton of snow.
Yeah, the listeners can't see what I'm going to show you here via our Zoom, but it is continuing to snow, and frankly, it has not stopped here. I'm on the Alpine Meadows side of Palisades Tahoe. Of course, we're up here putting on our KCRA 3 Olympic Zone show, but quickly had to pivot to coverage of the fatal avalanche, and I had done some backcountry skiing earlier in the week and conditions were incredible, but as the snow just continues to pile up, it's, as Andrew was reporting, I mean, it's really becoming a challenge to stay on top of. I can tell you just from where I'm at today, my truck was under 2 to 3 inches of snow per hour. I cleared it, and an hour later there's 2 to 3 inches of snow on the truck. That's the snow rate, and it's relentless. It just keeps coming down, and that's what the crews are dealing with in the recovery efforts, trying to bring those avalanche victims back to their loved ones.
Yeah, and a lot of people are hearing that this happened in the Castle Peak area. I mean, we just talked with Andrew, who's at Donner Summit. That's near that area. Soda Springs is also near that area as well. And you just went backcountry skiing yourself. Can you describe the area and the conditions where this avalanche took place?
Well, Castle Peak is a phenomenal place to go recreate out in the backcountry when the conditions are right, whether you're on snowshoes. Sometimes you don't even need snowshoes when the snow's packed down in the springtime. And it's a great place to go backcountry skiing. It's highly accessible right off of Interstate 80 across from Boreal. You've all seen Castle Peak as you're passing over the summit. It's off to your left. And then beyond that, you get back to an area called the Peter Grubb Hut, and that's a Sierra Club operated hut that you can stay in. And then one ridge over from there, you get into Frog Lake. So Frog Lake is a little bit more remote. There's a couple of ways of coming into it. Coming into it from the Castle Peak side is a popular route, and it appears this is the route that that group was taking back out of the Frog Lake huts. And if you've never seen these huts, they're amazing. I would love to stay there sometime, but it's very difficult. It's even more difficult to get a reservation there than it is in Yosemite. They're just a magical place, but it is surrounded by some very steep terrain that would make it hazardous coming out of there during a big snow event.
Yeah, and this group was on a three-day expedition. They were on their way back. Of course, you're looking at the weather, and you've been backcountry skiing many times yourself. I mean, can you go into kind of looking at the forecast and making the call of when to backcountry ski, especially in this case, they were on their way back from a trip?
Yeah, certainly when you go into a place like that, I'm sorry, starting to break up a little bit, Vicki, but when you go into a place like that, you know, you do need to look at the forecast. And if it's a 3-day trip, you need to look 3 days out. And, you know, I don't want to second guess their guides. There is areas of safe travel. I can only at this point surmise what they might have been doing at that point. But where the avalanche was reported, it appears to me that they had taken a longer route out of there to stay out of the hazard areas. And I believe that as a group, they were traversing what they thought was a safe zone, and an avalanche from above came down and took out the group. When you're in the backcountry, you would never send 16 people down a slope at once. So the only reasonable solution to this is that they were traveling as a group together at the base of this peak when the avalanche came down and took them out as they were trying to make their way back to Castle Peak. Now on to the recovery efforts. You know, it took a couple of hours in a snowcat just to get within 2 miles of those victims, and then they had to go the rest of the way in by foot. As you know, they recovered six survivors. They also, at that time, while they were loading the survivors up, they were able to locate eight of the deceased, and the ninth they still need to locate. But with the conditions, it's just too dangerous out there. They know that they're in a hazard area. There's already been a slide. There's already been at least that much more snow, if not more, piled on top of that weak layer. And so now that they're in a recovery versus rescue mode, it just doesn't make sense to send people in there. They did mark the bodies with avalanche probes, which are about 12 feet tall. They're long poles. And so if the beacons that the deceased were wearing stop working and the batteries run out, they will have marked their location with tall poles. And Vic, I want to do a quick little demonstration for your listeners. We've heard a lot of talk about cell phones and avalanche beacons. Now, we do know that they used SOS, which sends out a satellite message from the newer iPhone models. And then we also heard some confusion about avalanche beacons. And so when you go in the backcountry, just like a bicycle rider would wear a helmet or a kayaker would wear a life jacket, in the backcountry, probe, beacon, and shovel are always in your backpack. That is just standard gear. Now, the shovel, of course, to dig a snow cave or dig out someone who's buried, the probe to locate somebody if you have no other means, and now the beacon. And so I'm wearing my beacon right now, and you'll be able to hear it. I've got my buddy's beacon in send mode. I'm going to switch mine to search, and now listen to the sound. It's looking. Okay, so now it's located his beacon. So now, as I'm approaching his beacon, listen to the beeping sound. Listen to how it intensifies. I'm also following an arrow that's leading me to the beacon. And as I get closer, now I know I'm right on top of my victim buried in the snow. It's telling me I'm 0.1 meter away. And so with that, now I can pull out my probe and I can start probing the snow to find their exact location and then pull out the shovel and dig that person out. And so that is why this is just standard gear. The modern beacons actually have an arrow. You just follow it and it leads you right to them along with that audio signal.
Yeah, I thank you for that demonstration. I mean, it can be really difficult to visualize. I mean, many people, myself included, don't go backcountry skiing. And what you're describing, you were at the press conference yesterday with emergency responders. I mean, they were describing relentless conditions, heavy snow, gale force winds, just really extreme conditions. And this is what rescuers are up against. And you have been in these conditions yourself, reporting at KCRA in the thick of it. Can you speak to the risk that they are taking on themselves conducting this recovery effort?
Well, as you heard, the initial slide was reported as large as a football field. And so when it comes to trying to recover victims, stand in the end zone on a football field and look out over that football field and everything is green, or in this case, it's white. And imagine yourself trying to find somebody underneath the grass on that football field. And that's what they're dealing with. All the while, they know there's a hazard above them. It already showed its ugly fangs. It already slid once and there's an entire slope that is still there that could slide, not to mention what has already loaded on top of the area that previously slid. So they know the danger is there, and that's the hazard. I mean, you have to tip their hats to them. They knew what they were going into on night one, but they knew that they had a rescue possible. There were six survivors, so they did everything they could to go in and get those survivors out because they may have succumbed to exposure had they not been in there overnight in the gale force winds in that storm. Those people did actually manage to find some of the deceased on their own. They did manage to build a makeshift shelter to get themselves out of the elements. As you might have read or heard, two of the victims were not mobile. They had to be helped out of the backcountry. So without the help of those rescuers going in and risking their own lives, those people may not be here today as well. But now, as hard as it's to talk about, because you think about the folks who are sitting at home in anguish and sadness, knowing that their loved ones are buried out there, you know, you also can't ask those rescuers to take on that same level of risk when at this point it's a recovery.
You know, finally, as I mentioned, the identities have not yet been released, but Sugar Bowl Academy in Norden, that is in the area, announced that multiple members of their community and others with strong connections to Sugar Bowl, Donner Summit, and the backcountry community have died in the slide. And the San Francisco Chronicle reported that most of the group were women and mothers of children on a nearby ski team who are participating in an annual backcountry excursion. As a backcountry skier yourself, how tight-knit is the backcountry community?
It is a tight-knit community. I mean, we're all out there seeking the same thing, the thrill of, you know, people always say, oh, wow, you have to hike up and you only get one run down. It's the journey that's part of the adventure. It's the hike. It's, if you like hiking, it's wonderful out there. You're cruising through the backcountry and you get the reward of coming back down. There's no lift lines. There's no one poaching your line. They're not going to steal the powder from, you know, you get fresh tracks every time if you play it right. But it also comes with a level of risk. And, you know, it's a risk versus reward prospect. You get exercise. You're in the outdoors. You get to see a part of the Sierra that most people don't get to see during the winter months. But as Andrew said, you have to do it sensibly. You have to educate yourself on the conditions. And nowadays, between the Central Sierra Snow Lab, the Sierra Avalanche Center, who's constantly keeping tabs on the conditions and noting where there are weak layers, noting when there's wind loading, and all of the factors that can lead to hazardous conditions, and on what slope. Sometimes skiing a north slope versus a west slope could be all the difference in avalanche danger. And so having that knowledge, and we have all those resources now, you can pull it up on your iPhone in the parking lot. It's really about educating yourself and making those educated guesses, or not guesses, decisions. And that's what makes this sport so fun. I mean, we all have things that are risky and we do, and, you know, and we do the best we can to mitigate them. And in the end, many a times the risk is well worth the reward.
Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And, you know, again, I want to send my condolences to the families. And, you know, like you said, it is a tight knit community. And I'm sure I could have easily have been friends with any one of these folks had we all been in the same room together. So, I just want to close on that note as we think about them.
Yeah. And that is KCRA reporter Brian Hickey, who has been following the developments of a deadly avalanche very closely and is a longtime experienced backcountry skier himself. Up next, with the 2026 Winter Olympics set to conclude on Sunday, we'll talk to an athlete turned researcher studying the ways that race, gender, and class intersect with sports. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.